Hello, I'm Dan Aykroyd, and welcome to this fine motion picture emporium. It's nice to know you're here tonight, rather than at home shoving cheap little plastic cartridges into cheap imported video systems that keep you and your family hostage in your own home or apartment. Now, let's face it, big screen entertainment is what it's all about. We've enjoyed it for years. Movies are great. There's nothing like a good movie, or even a bad one for that matter.
Go. You said that so fast. Welcome back, my friends, to the podcast that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. I am Joe Spiegel, and sitting across from me is...
Mike Sutherland.
Yes, the one and only. And this is Cinescape Movie Review. Today's episode is, of course, going to be about Logan, the third and final, well, supposed final Logan, or the Wolverine trilogy.
The final Hugh Jackman, supposedly.
Yeah, supposedly. I mean, look, we could talk about other people that have supposedly done their last time, Michael Bay with Transformers or whatever, but you throw enough money at someone, I could see them coming back for
Yeah.
But he really seems like in interviews that he was done anyway. So this movie has been designed in a way for it to be Hugh Jackman's final ride. So we're going to talk about that film. We're going to talk about our flicks of the week, which mine is going to be the 2000 film Chocolat.
Mine is Stir Crazy.
All right, Stir Crazy with Wilder and Pryor.
Uh-huh.
All right. And then there's just a couple trailers that popped up. I didn't see any worthwhile news that was worth talking about, did you? All right, so hopefully this will be a quick and easy one. This one won't be 2.5 hours like the last one. I know. All right, so bear with us and take it away.
Bub.
That is just so befitting, isn't it? Apropos, if you will.
I didn't know.
Bub.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Meanwhile...
How you doing?
All right, so, of course, this week we are talking about Logan, which, look, there have been movies that we have seen the trailers for that they've given away the entire movie and we weren't really that excited to see them. Or, like, give an example, X-Men Apocalypse. You pretty much saw the whole movie in the trailer and it didn't look like anything special. But this one was different.
Most movies, XXX, yeah. Resident Evil,
uh-huh.
Even going so far as saying Fist almost fight. Split.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of Split, too. So, but here's the thing with Logan. Even though the trailers definitely give away a large chunk of the movie, made it very predictable in most of the regards, the trailers were also so goddamn perfect song selections for both of the two main trailers and the Red Band versions of those trailers. And I knew this movie was going to be bleak. It was going to be gloomy, but it was still so well put together. I was still hyped to see this. And we get to the movie. Now, I try to do this thing where I try to separate my review to the actual talking review about the film. But there's something that I really noticed. Look, I read afterwards about how this movie is very comparable to Shane, the classic Western, because they're even watching it in the movie. And then during the end scene, the girl's reading a line from Shane.
Right.
Okay, when she's talking to the other kids. So, the old classic Western is a huge influence on this film, and Shane being the biggest of them all. But I've never seen Shane, so I didn't get those references because, like I said, I haven't seen it. But what it reminded me of partially was 1992's Unforgiven by Clint Eastwood.
Right.
Because it was like the old guy who's done, but he has to come back to do something that triggers what he used to. But more than that, it was something else. When I saw Forgiven, I was very young. I was only like 15 years old, 14 or 15. And I didn't fully appreciate Unforgiven at the time. I thought it was just, why is there a best picture? Well, a few years went by and I watched it again and I saw what the big deal was about it. There was an underlying tone with the film that I couldn't see as a child, as a younger child, until I got older. Logan is like that as well. Like if I had saw, like, this isn't the kind of movie that I would take my kids to the drive-in to see. Even if they say, Dad, we want to see Logan, I wouldn't take them, because this is that kind of film where it's not for kids. And I don't mean just because of the violence and the language. No, it's not that. It's the tone. It's the underlying tone of the entire film. This whole film is like sadness, regret, and loss, and everything. It's a child wouldn't get it. You know what I mean? a child would only get the action scene. And then there'd be all these boring moments in those acts where they're just like, oh, Dad, I'm bored. Can I go play at the playground or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like when you're watching The Dark Knight. You know, there's a lot of slow drama. And what I'm trying to say is when I saw Unforgiven, and it took me years to finally appreciate it for what it was, this is one of those movies that I could tell that if it had come out when I was younger, or if I was younger when I saw this movie, that I don't think I would totally appreciate it, you know, as much as I did now. And I noticed that for some reason that night, maybe it was because I was really stressed out before I got to the movie or whatever, but the emotional impact of the film, of how the everything ends up by the end of the film, it didn't really hit me as a movie fan at the time. You know, I didn't start really, when I started doing research on this movie before I wrote my review and I started watching the trailers again, there was something different this time. And I could tell, there was what you would call a delay in my reaction to this movie. Like, I knew it was a good movie. I knew it from start to finish. This was a goddamn good movie. But it still, we've seen plenty of good movies where there wasn't an emotional impact. Well, I think I kept waiting for this huge emotional impact to happen throughout the film. And for some reason, it didn't hit me that way until after I had seen it. After a couple days after. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And you know what? That, call it what you will, but maybe that makes the movie even more special, more genius in its execution, that it's not like the instant gratification kind of film. It's one that makes you think about what these characters are going through, what they have gone through, and this end result. It's not the happy, you know, it's not this happy ending, you know. It's like the Saving Private Ryan ending, you know, like with Tom Hanks on the bridge when he says earn this and
right.
Things like that. It's sad, but it leaves a glimmer of hope, that kind of. And yeah, dude, once I finally thought back on this film and how it ends up, I am truly going to miss Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine. He was the perfect fit. Sure, people had their problems with him, and I know the height thing and all that stuff, but we grew to as people. Well,
again, I mean, when you're thinking about it, yeah, in the comics, and they even stated this in the movie, but uh-huh. You know, half, like, most of this is all made up, and it's not even accurate to a point as it is.
Uh-huh.
I can overlook certain things. Wolverine's height, which in terms of comic books versus film, there has to be some give and take. You can't have a guy Wolverine size in the comics running around
fucking everybody up, being a badass.
Kind of
like standing up to everybody.
No. I mean, there aren't many people that are Wolverine size running around in the real world, like Glenn Danzig.
Yeah, do you know there was an actor I thought of that would have been a great fit for if they had done the casting, you know, back in 2000? Jackie Earle Haley.
No.
You don't think so?
Like, no.
Cause picture him when he played Rorschach. And
he's too thin.
The growly voice. Well, work the fucker out.
No, again, he would have to gain like 200 pounds. I mean, Jackie Earle Haley is 120 pounds soaking wet,
uh-huh.
If that. Wolverine is more like 250.
But he's small.
Right, but he's still 250 pounds of muscle.
Well, look, I mean, they made Hugh Jackman go to the gym hardcore.
Again, but Hugh Jackman is 6-whatever. It's not that hard to put on 20, 30 pounds of muscle when you're my height, your height, when you're already 200 pounds or more of muscle. It's just the workout. It's the Dwayne The Rock Johnson workout.
Well, it's you a movie, so you they could have found a way to make him look
you
like
can't.
That.
You can't. It doesn't work. Unless you put on a fake rubber suit or whatever, and it wouldn't have worked. You can't have a character like Wolverine played by someone like Jackie Earle Haley because it doesn't fit the character. You see what I'm saying? It doesn't fit. He doesn't fit the character.
When I think about him playing Rorschach, you know, and how gritty he was, I could see having the same personality as Hugh Jackman's
but
Wolverine.
But Rorschach isn't Wolverine. Jackie Earle Haley fits that character mold, like he fits the Freddy Krueger character mold, or the subversive type being, you know, like a detective, like a Philip Marlowe type, or a stalker type, you know. He fits more like the dude that can disappear in rear, Nightcrawler.
Oh, okay.
He fits more
Kurt Wagner.
Yeah, he fits more the Kurt Wagner, Nightcrawler, or someone along that line. Maybe Iceman, maybe. You know, that body type, that style, not Iceman in particular, but at least Kurt Wagner, or characters similar to that nature. these subversive, you know what, the Question. If you've ever watched DC, the Justice League, the Question, who is voiced by Jeffrey Combs, and he is this conspiracy theorist, okay? Jackie Earle Haley would fit that type of mold, or the Shadow, or something like that.
All right, you know what, here, let me correct myself then. Because, okay, height, I know, I get the height thing, all right? But I think...
No, but your opinion's your opinion.
But voice-wise, I think he would have been a great Wolverine. Like, for cartoon, for animated.
Yeah, okay.
I can see that. But, face-wise, I mean, you can only buff him up enough where in his body's only going to get a certain size.
Right.
All right. I can see that.
Yeah, it's just not going to work for the size of a character, you know, that he needs to be.
But, here, over 17
he's
years...
He's a fucking linebacker, yeah, let's face it.
Over 17 years, we've all grown to love Hugh Jackman.
Not everyone.
Well... There might be a few haters out there.
I'm sure there are.
But majority-wise, everyone loves him as well. He grew on us. You know what I mean? It fit. So I know I'm trying to get, you know, do these comparisons to those were the inspirations. This movie is like a Western. You know, it's like a road trip Western, just modernized or futurized. It's set 12 years in a future based off of the death of... And from what I read, it's supposed to be dystopian, which I always forget what dystopian... Isn't that mean like more government reign, like a more oppressive?
Yeah. Bleak.
And there's a lot of signs of that bleakness, you know, like with the auto trucks, you know, on the road, how they had no
that
drivers.
That was pretty cool.
That was creepy.
I mean, I'm watching the movie and see the trucks drive by and I'm like,
yeah. I kept looking at those, yeah.
Are those free-floating freight trucks?
Yeah.
It was what just, the fuck is that?
It was just like the just car- like, yeah, it was like the cargo beds only.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and then you know, Logan called them auto trucks.
Yeah.
He goes, goddamn. Right. And all right, so dystopian is everything is unpleasant or bad. Typically a totalitarian. Yeah. Yeah, people are still allowed to gamble. They had a casino there. So this is not your typical. What I did not put this in my is, look, what was it, 4 years ago? We went and saw The Wolverine, right? And we both liked how the first two-thirds of the movie didn't feel like your standard superhero movie. It felt like more noirish, you know, and then putting Wolverine into an environment was great. And then you had that shitty third act with the Silver Samurai / Shredder, and then it just was meh, right? This time around, it's like if you go in order with these movies, you know, Origins, look, I still like Origins, but it's got a gang shitload of problems. I definitely, it's the worst in the whole trilogy. And then you have The Wolverine.
Nobody liked X. I say nobody, but a lot of people did Origins.
Yeah, I can see the problems with it. But and then The Wolverine was much better, but then it leaves a bad taste in your mouth with a shitty ending. And then you get to this movie. And this movie has a very good first act, a very good second act, a very good third act. This whole movie is good from start to finish. You know, and like I said, it's predictable, but yet most movies in a way are going to be predictable because we've seen everything. So it's okay. I pretty much, without all the little bits and pieces, I knew how this movie was going to end for the most.
Really? You knew that he was going to?
Well, yeah. I was expecting it. They keep saying one last ride, okay, with the marketing thing, right? One last ride. And then also just, you know, Hugh Jackman doing that quick tweet while he was filming saying Old Man Logan, # Old Man Logan.
Right.
Right. And things like that, dropping little hints, right? So, and then the trailer sold me. Like, they made it seem really sad and that this was going to be the final movie. I mean, there was plenty of times where we thought, like, the scenes were in the trailer where Patrick Stewart's Professor Xavier, he's, like, using his mind powers. You see the guys behind him, you know, the Reavers behind him with the assault rifles.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was his death scene from the trailer. Like, they were being shot. Right? And it's not, but still, it gave you that feel that this movie is going to be more tragic than hopeful. And that's what it is. It's like The Shootist in a way, or something where this guy who's had a rough life, he's on his last, he has like this one last chance to redeem himself. And it doesn't matter if he lives or not. He just needs to do this. He needs to do this right thing to right all the wrongs of, and look, I don't think you can get into any Wolverine movie where it goes into a whole lot of depth into what Logan is feeling. I mean, it's got moments here and there, but most of the time, it's by his actions and by his facial expression. And that, you know, that makes it more interesting. It's like this trilogy, in a way, is kind of like the Man with No Name trilogy, you know, with Clint Eastwood. And, you know, it ends on this great note. Like I said, this last one is like a Western. And each movie, Wolverine's different in a way. He's the same, but he's different, what he's dealing with. And this final time it's like this hopelessness, you know, he's just going through the motion of, because everything else is gone, right? Jean is dead. All the X-Men are dead. All the mutants are pretty much. And all he has left is Professor X. He's taking care of him. And it's just sad. You know, one of the most poignant moments in the movie is when Wolverine has to take Professor X to the bathroom, you know, to go, you know, and how he's just helpless. I mean, he's already in a wheelchair, so he's already helpless in that regard. But still, this is different. It's like he, you know, before Professor Xavier would be able to handle that on his own. Now he can't. He has to. And that's why this movie is so good and so ballsy, is because you never would ever expect to see these characters so beaten down and so much of a shell of their former glorious selves like you do in this movie. I think the only movie I could think of off the top of my head that ever came close to doing this, because I'm talking about live action, is not, I would say The Dark Knight Returns, but that was only animated form. I would say Watchmen, you know, where it showed some of the old, a few of the old, you know, superheroes like the Comedian and right. stuff like that, right? You know, where, you know, he dies at the beginning of his loft apartment. So yeah, you don't get, and that's why that the Watchmen was so intriguing, is because of things like that. You know, it didn't just stay in the glory time, you know, the good versus evil time. It went past that. That's what this movie does. It goes way past all the events of whatever else is going to happen, and it goes to this bleak future. And there's just this glimmer of hope, which in the form of X-23, you know, Laura.
Right.
And you don't even know if she's worthwhile for a lot of the movie, because she's such a wild card for most of for at least the first half of the film, because, you know, she's very unpredictable and impulsive. You know, is it worth keeping her alive or not? But, you know, because and it's like Professor Xavier needed to be in most of this film to keep reiterating to Wolverine that she's very much like you, and you need to give her a chance. We need to save her. We need to get her to this place. And it was funny because the trailers made it seem like Xavier might just be a figment of Wolverine's imagination. Like, he's already been dead for a while, and he's just his conscience speaking to him. That's the vibe I got from it. I don't know if you did or not.
What?
In the trailers, when Xavier was, you know, before we saw the movie, when Xavier's talking to him, it always seems like he's only talking to Wolverine. Like, maybe he's just a figment of Wolverine's imagination.
No, I didn't.
No, you never got that? No. I kind of did. That's what I felt. I wouldn't doubt, like, if while we're watching the movie, you find out that, you know. I mean, look, right, the first time they show Xavier, you already know that he's real. So then it nips that in the bud. But that's what the trailer. So, but yeah, it's like a lot of times I would get pissed off that a movie doesn't explain enough of what happened in the past, like in between the previous X-Men movie and what's happening now in Logan. But the mystery of it all, just the little hints of what happened and things like that, that it makes the movie so much more effective, because it adds to the whole mystery of it. And it just, I don't know, it adds to the aura, the whole gloomy. So I've been hogging this whole fucking thing. You say something, movie.
What do you want me to do?
Well, because you, when we walked out of the theater, you also said that this was.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised. After the success of Deadpool, and here's where the problem is going to lie. So moving forward,
yeah,
Fox actually did a really good job with pricing.
Yeah.
They allowed the story to just develop on its own.
Yeah,
and that was good. I don't have anything bad about this movie. There's nothing about this movie that makes me go, ugh, they shouldn't have done this or they shouldn't have done that. The opening scene sets the tone.
Yeah, definitely.
Where, you know, these guys are hijacking, you know, or they're trying to steal the rims off of his car.
Yeah.
And he gets all pissed off. Yeah. And he's had it. So instead of, you know, he's trying to, you know, be buddy-buddy, basically.
Yeah.
And just trying to calm the situation. Hey, you know, hey, guys, just walk away.
Yeah.
Just walk away.
Fucking dude shoots him right in the stomach with the chest with a shotgun.
Yeah. And he gets back up and he's like, okay, you're fucking done for now.
Yeah.
We never got a clue as to really what is killing him, but we understand.
It's hinted at, like, kind of like the thing that makes him strong is now what's killing him, like the adamantium.
Right.
Is poisoning him.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was cool. The story, it didn't drag.
Mm-hmm.
There was no moments of the story just dragging. The guy that played Caliban was great.
Yeah.
You know, he's a mutant tracker, and then all of a sudden there are no mutants.
Yeah, Steven Merchant. You ever remember that show, Hello Ladies, on HBO?
Uh-huh.
That was him, the main actor.
Never watched.
Thank you.
So he's been in a bunch of other movies.
Yeah.
He's really, really good. But what surprised me was this girl, Daphne.
Daphne Keene.
She plays the new Wolverine, if you want to call her.
Yeah,
that.
Laura.
And her reactions to the scenes. You know, she doesn't talk for the first three quarters of the fucking movie.
Yeah.
And she screams and whatever else, but that's not the point. I mean, when she goes on her murder rampage, fucking great.
Yeah.
You know, it shows how lethal her character was or is. It shows that she's basically a feral being, an orphan. She trusts nobody except for, and even then Professor X is damaged beyond belief.
Yeah.
And he's the one that fucking killed everybody on the East Coast, and that's why they had to flee Wolverine.
In my opinion, his character was the most tragic character of the film.
Yeah. And it's one last road, you know, buddy trip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to get to Eden, which is in North Dakota, which doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Everybody believes exactly. It's a great take on how we can get anybody to believe anything at any time through whether it's comic, right?
Yeah.
Spin it any way we want. Believe it enough, then it exists. You know, it's the old adage, if you believe you're right, then
yeah.
No matter how many times people try to prove.
Yeah, and they never explain why Canada is so closed off. Like these reavers, these hunters that are from this corporation, they know that they have to get to before they get over the border.
Well, the reavers are they're technically not with a corporation. If you the comics and stuff like that, they are hired mercenaries that are used to kill mutes.
Yeah. So. But it's like they even the scientist, the lead scientist that's with them at the end of the film, you know, he's like, we have to get them before they get to the border. You know, there's like they never explain what's on the other side of this border that would keep them from pursuing. You know,
right?
Like it's all up to imagination. Now, there's something I read. There's like all these theories on certain things. One of the theories is that there's a Canadian X-Men from the comics called like Delta.
There's Alpha Flight.
Alpha Flight. I think that's what.
Well, if you look in the credits,
uh-huh.
There is a piece in the credits where it's scrolling by and it says Alpha something, and then right below it says Flight.
Okay.
So and they were animations. So it actually says it in the credits, Alpha Flight.
Okay. So yeah, that was one of the little Easter eggs they hinted at being possible. But yeah, there was just all this uncertainty with the entire film, and that added to the tension of it all.
Right.
Because anyone could go at any time. It felt like, you know, it felt like Logan could die at any Professor X or the girl or anybody. You know, it. I love a good villain. Everybody loves movies loves a good villain, and Boyd Holbrook was excellent in his role. He's that guy, you know, he played a character named Donald Pierce where he has this arrogance to him because he always thinks that he has the upper hand at all times, right? Like he's kind of like Negan in a way, you know, from the Walking Dead, where he's always a step ahead and he knows that no matter what you do, he's going to always have an answer. And so you should pretty much just give up. Because he's going to win. He's the most confident, arrogant asshole of the film.
So my guess is that a lot of the movie and a lot of the movie was taken from the comic, The Death of Wolverine, and Old Man Logan. That's kind of mixed together. Because the premise of The Death of Wolverine is a virus from the microverse causes Wolverine's mutant healing factor to burn out and stop working, which allows enemies from his past to finally kill him. The series is followed by a number of aftermath miniseries that chronicle Wolverine's friends and for his death. These series lead into a weekly Wolverine series. I'm trying to get to the Dr. Abraham Cornelius, founder of the Weapon X. Wolverine travels to paradise with Thing, Wolverine's healing factor. Wolverine no longer has it. On hearing this, Cornelius is pissed off. Wolverine defeats him in his latest experiment. In desperation, he tries to escape by activating the Helium bonding. Three other are shattered. The whole story is that X-23 takes over for Wolverine when he dies. So, theory is my theory, because there's also a theory going around that Wolverine, he's a mishmash of a bunch of different, okay? Because he has different pasts, different memories, and all this other stuff. So it goes through.
Yeah.
So, what if Wolverine does die, okay? He dies continuously, but what happens is that when he dies, another Wolverine gets activated. Another Weapon X gets activated after a memory dump.
Okay.
So Wolverine's memory gets dumped. They find the body.
Yeah.
Bring it back, dump the memory into the new Wolverine, where it's now just a mix of fucking multiples.
Yeah.
And he goes on thinking that's still Wolverine,
mm-hmm.
right? And this continues on. So Old Man Logan can be construed as, even though it's the last ride, it really isn't the last ride because this version of Wolverine is dying.
Yeah.
Because the healing factor is not strong enough as the original because he's a clone.
Yeah.
But he still has all of Wolverine's memories. So the original dies and they keep cloning him.
Yeah.
And they show that in the fucking movie that there is another X-23 because they released him.
Yeah, X-24.
Yeah. No, it's not X-24. They use him as X-24 because X-23 is still alive. Logan is X-23.
They call the little girl X-23.
No. Fucking Logan is X-23. You're not listening. Logan is X-23. The girl, they just named her X-23 in this other fucking hospital because she's an offspring of Logan.
Okay.
X-23 took the mantle of Wolverine, but Old Man Logan was brought in to serve as an X-Men and featured in his ongoing. So follow along. X-23 gets activated after that happens. Okay. So he is now Logan. So in the movie, as you see him growing and dying in the movie, and then they activate the other Wolverine that was in the trailer, and they have to inject him with that healing virus shit.
Yeah.
Because the clones are starting to degenerate.
Yeah.
They don't have the healing factor of the original body, which has long since perished.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of made a joke on my review about... this might be Hugh Jackman's final time playing the Wolverine, but I think, there might be a little thing with Cable and Deadpool, you know, going back to save Wolverine where and just having it
possible.
Yeah, because, you know, the time traveling thing. So I wouldn't doubt it if they did it in some kind of clever way. And, you know, this movie was just, it was really good. Like I said, it was predictable because of the trailers giving away a lot of the storyline, but not everything. You know, it didn't have everything that you would think. It would just, you know, I mean, look, the whole family thing, the farmer family, that was predictable, of course. I knew they were all going to die.
Right.
But I wonder if Xavier knew that this was going to happen to the family, but it was still needed to happen for them to have one nice evening before it's a shit.
Maybe.
You know, I don't know, but it was just, yeah, everything. I mean, that, you know, the way that Xavier dies in the movie is, you know, it's not like some big glorious thing. Like if you remember, if you go back to X-Men: The Last Stand, when Professor X gets killed by Jean Grey by the Phoenix, you know, they make it like this big epic moment, right? You know, where he looks at Wolverine and all of a sudden he disintegrates, right? It was epic. Well, this time it wasn't epic. There was nothing epic about the death of Charles Xavier in this movie. It was fucking sad, and it's uneventful the right word, I'm not sure, but it was still, I think that was the whole point of it being uneventful, is that he dies with this regret, you know, and he remembers that the event that happens in Westchester is his fault.
Right.
You know, that they hinted about in the movie. And that, you know, there's no going back from that. And so he dies with this regret, thinking, and also thinking that Wolverine is the one that stabbed him. You know, when it's not actually Wolverine,
he didn't.
For that moment, he thought that Wolverine was stabbed him because he gets right over him. But it was, you know, it was X-24. And it's just, it's tragedy. You know what I mean? There is no happy, there's no happiness to this movie. And that's another reason why it's so good. It's because in that regard, there's not that predictability with that.
Right.
So, yeah, bravo over to Patrick Stewart for what he did in this. You know, bravo to fuck everybody, dude. Everybody was really good in this. Everybody. It was, you know, it was just, they need to make more superhero movies. Because after seeing a film like this done this way, kind of hard to go back to a movie like, say, X-Men Apocalypse, take it seriously, you know?
I could never take X-Men Apocalypse shit movie.
Yeah, but now it's even more shit, if you know what I mean. It just makes it even more just too grand scale to take seriously. Anyway, all the action scenes were awesome. I loved especially the part at the end, man, the slow motion scene in the hotel was badass when he's dispatching all those guys trying to stop Xavier.
Right.
But that scene at the end, man, where he takes the shot and he just becomes his old, just, you know, feral, you know, your word for the night, feral self, right? Fucking just goes buck wild on them for just a few minutes before, you know, it finally dies back down again. And then when they show the X-24, I don't know if you noticed it or not, but to me it seemed like the X-24 was made to look very similar to his brother from the first movie, you know, Sabretooth, played by Liev Schreiber. Mm-hmm. Like the facial hair and stuff. It seemed kind of familiar to me. But anyway, whatever. That's what it kind of reminded me. But I like the fact that the X-24 was made to look way younger and it was different. Just badass. This movie was badass, and it shows that you can make this kind of movie if you actually take time to grow some balls and just present it the way it should be presented. You know, because we should have seen Wolverine being able to dispatch people this way a long time.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with making PG movies and whatnot, but when you have a character like Wolverine fucking slices and dices, you have to amp it up.
Yeah.
You have to make it an R-rated movie in order to properly present the character.
Yeah. I mean, look, you go back to the 97 Spawn. Now, that movie should have been R-rated. It should have been able to do what Spawn was supposed to do with the storytelling, you know? That
it was awful.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's supposed to... There's a reason why Spawn does what he does and why the way the world is. The PG-13 movie couldn't touch on most of that stuff, all right? You know, then you had Blade in 98, but that showed that you could do an R-rated movie, but it still didn't make that huge amount of money. But it was like they were too afraid to even try again, except with Punisher in 2004, and that wasn't a very good movie anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, your mistake, this is what a lot of people know as well. You're mistaking violence. It's not. You have to write a movie. Just because you can write a fucking great Spawn movie that you don't have to necessarily show all the violence. That doesn't, you can do all that off screen. What makes the movie, the character and the story. And that's what differentiates Deadpool and this one, Logan, from 90% of even the regular MCU. Because let's face it, this movie is superior in a lot of ways to most of the MCU.
Uh-huh.
And because they were given leeway to let the character just play out.
Yeah.
Not the violence. That's part of it. But the overall story, you know? Mm-hmm. This makes Iron Man, this makes Captain America is a whole different. I don't want to get into that because the first Captain America was a superior.
Mm-hmm.
That one had excellent character development. But Captain America 2 was a good movie. The Civil War was a good movie. But I think Logan's a better movie than that.
Well, because also it takes the chance that Civil War was afraid to take.
There you go. It takes a risk. Mm-hmm. It kills a main character. It
kills more than one.
Right. But it gives more definition to these characters, too. It isn't just, you know, a run-and-gun type of movie. It is, but it isn't. Because it starts off with Wolverine being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
The dude's just drinking.
Well, also, if they die, it makes their actions more resonant.
Yeah.
That way, too. You know, in Civil War, I mean, look, Civil War was really good, but still, no one dies in that movie.
Right.
It's just another fight.
Yep.
Just another big fight. It looks great, and it's funny. I'm entertained while I'm watching it, but still, no one died. You know, they made it look like at the end of the movie that either Bucky, Captain America, or you know, Tony Stark, was one of them was going to die, and then no one fucking dies.
But the thing is that Bucky and Captain and Iron Man didn't die in Civil War.
Yeah.
Captain America did. He was shot and killed. But yeah. They didn't take that chance. So
yeah, the movie didn't take the chance.
And that's fine. Acceptable. That's the way that they wanted to present the material. I can live with that. But this movie, apart from the violence, okay, even though it was important, actually was very important to the movie,
mm-hmm.
It just wasn't an egregious killing here and there. It plays a role in the movie.
Yeah.
If more superhero movies were like this, like I said, you don't have to have an R-rated violent gore fest.
Yeah.
You can make a PG or PG-13 movie and still have it this good, you know?
Well, it seemed like with this movie, with every violent scene, except for the first scene.
With the exception of the amount of fucks that were in.
Yeah. That threw me off.
That was really funny.
But, the you know, look, you can't count the first violent scene because you know that he's going to live longer than that. But with every scene after that, it was like every scene of extreme violence, it was like live or die.
Right.
You know, and it was important. He was fighting for his life every single time. When you watch
not just his life.
Well, yeah. And he's fighting for the other people around him. And the other movies, it's like, well, I don't think he's going to die. He might get tranquilized or something, you know, and then captured and taken somewhere.
Right.
But this movie, no. He could die at any fucking moment.
Right.
And that makes it more important.
And that's what drives the movie.
Yeah.
Because you know that these guys are out. The bad guys are out for blood.
Yeah.
They are out to kill. When Caliban fucking releases the grenades. See, that was unexpected.
Uh-huh.
I did not expect him to grab the grenade mm-hmm. and fucking suicide out.
Yeah.
Because that was a nice thing.
Yeah.
You know, you think, oh, he's going to reach for it. He's going to throw it out of the truck to save himself, right?
Yeah.
And blow up all these other guys. And he's a hero of them.
Yeah.
No, and he's just like out of the frying pan into the fire or whatever
yeah,
he said,
it's
right?
Like
and
each character.
Boom.
Each of these three main characters of Caliban, Professor X, and Wolverine, they had to redeem themselves in one way or another.
In a sense.
And so that's how Caliban redeems himself. And Xavier redeems himself by getting Wolverine to help her, help
right.
the girl, because he can't do it himself.
Right, but I mean, I don't think he's really redeeming himself. He's playing the conscience.
Yeah, but in he still ends up redeeming himself because of it.
Yeah, you know, in a sense.
You know, and then of course, what Wolverine does is redeem himself by doing the right thing, by doing the Mad Max thing. You know, because this movie ends up to me kind of like Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Right.
You know, by saving the Lost Boys kind of thing. But
yeah,
it was good. It was sad. It was fucking good, dude.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize how good it was until after.
Yeah, and like I said, a lot of studios could take this movie as a blueprint and make good movies again, you know.
Yeah.
But they're not going to, you know. And we're getting the reports like, you know, Tom McFarlane says, "Oh, the new Spawn is going to be even more violent and bloody."
You know what
than
my prediction
else.
Is? This is my prediction. There's going to be this huge spurt of just a shitload of R-rated comic book movies that have come out, and a bunch of them are going to flop because they were rushed.
Right.
Right? And they didn't have content. You know, they didn't have substance. They just had content, right? And then it's going to make them all go back down to PG-13 again.
Yeah, exactly. You are absolutely right. You know, it's...
Because no one thinks about the fucking long run. It's all about in the moment.
Yeah.
The trend.
Yeah, and we're as guilty of that as anybody else, but... with the movies in and of itself, yeah, we're going to get hammered with a whole bunch of R-rated movies. Some will be okay. Some are going to be fucking shitty.
Yeah.
You know, but every one of them is going to be based off of the fact that they can say fuck, and then that there's going to be a ton of blood.
Yeah.
You know, not story, just fucking heads rolling, you know, body parts flying everywhere.
Yeah.
And no story.
Hopefully, I mean, look, we know it's going to go that way. Hopefully it doesn't, but...
No, it's going
to. It's going to. Well, that's Hollywood for you. So, but at least before that trend is going to hit us, at least we've gotten two really good R-rated...
We're going to get another one, too, because Deadpool's coming out.
Yeah, the Deadpool sequel. Yeah. Yeah. And then, I'll talk about that one. But all right, so I gave the movie an 8 out of 10.
So did I.
All right.
I'm right there with you.
Very good. As of today, it is at a 93 approval rating. And I think, what did we give on Zelogan? I gave it 82 and you gave it 73.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean.
Close enough. We're within a single. So.
Yeah, we both pretty much predicted it was going to be good. So, yeah. Excellent.
I didn't expect it to be this good. You know, I expected it to be above normal.
Like
good.
The trailers made it look way better than it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's no. Logan is awesome. If you love Wolverine, best film of the series goes out on powerful. So, all right. Next up is flicks of the week. Mine is the 2000 film Chocolat, which is it's a Miramax film. It's one of those films that you only hear about every once in a while. Someone will mention it on a TV series, like some characters say, "Oh, have you ever seen Chocolat?" Or, you know, like someone, there was some movie I watched where you go, "Have you ever seen Johnny Depp in Chocolat?" You know? And that's the funny part is because Johnny Depp is on the cover of the movie, but he doesn't show up until about halfway through the film. It's like a 2-hour movie. He shows up halfway through, and then he's only in there for another quarter of the movie, and then he's gone again for the last quarter of the movie. So, Johnny, this is not a Johnny Depp movie. This is a Juliette Binoche movie. All right, famous French actress. And it's set in 1959. I've always heard Benoit. I'll just say Benoit. It's set in 1959, French village, where the religion there is Catholicism. It's run by a mayor who pretty much dictates. He's not a dictator, but he still controls the way things are run in the town. He tells the pastor who does the weekly sermons. He tells him how to think, what to say during his sermons, like that. The character of Juliette Binoche, which her name is Vianne, she comes in with her teenage daughter, or very, I don't know if she's teenage, but she's very young. Comes in with her daughter. She's a single parent, which everyone at that time, you know, is like, oh, she's got, you know, she doesn't have a father for the kid, you know, judgmental already, right? And she starts up her own chocolate business. Now, well, it's called a chocolatier or whatever the fuck, I can't remember what, but it's his own little store that sells specialized chocolate. And she's really good at predicting what kind of chocolate, and, you know, they're all individually wrapped and they're very, very elegant in their presence. She shows up and starts this business right in the middle of Lent, which no, you know, I guess Lent is a period where you're supposed to be inhibiting yourself more than your religion's already inhibiting you.
You give up.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. So you're inhibiting yourself even more. And then to the dismay of the mayor, who doesn't like this chain, and he starts convincing people around the town that she's sent by the devil, but not in such harsh words, you know, just more like he wants her out of there because she's being chained. And what happens is, over time, she's slowly, like, people are starting to learn that, to experience life and not just, like, stuck in their own little ruts, you know, like marriages or whatever it is, you know. It's about experiencing. She runs into a lot of opposition because of it. But there are people that are supportive that come around throughout the film. There's a character played by Judi Dench, who's this old lady who's she's bitter about her daughter, who's played by Carrie Ann, keeping her grandson away from her because Carrie Ann Moss's character doesn't agree with her lifestyle, you know, of her, you know, go to the doctor and not, you know, read into religion and blah blah blah, right? So there's another character played by Lena Olin, who she gets away from her husband, played by Peter Stormare, because he's abusive. And she lives with Benoist's character at her chocolaterie. And there's a missed opportunity with this film. And I don't know why it didn't go farther into it, because this is Miramax. Miramax in 2000 had the balls to go the gay, and they don't do it with this movie. There's this sexual vibe between Benoist's and Lena Olin's character, where I keep waiting for it to happen. The whole time that they're talking to each other, and Benoist is opening up her mind, you know, but Olin's mind to you know, not having to be married if she doesn't want to be, you know, and things like that. And there's this connection between them. And I swear to God, there's this vibe, but it never comes to fruition, because out of nowhere, that's when Johnny Depp's character shows up, and then she falls for him instead. And Johnny Depp is considered a gypsy, because he lives on a boat, a river boat that just keeps traveling around France or whatever. Just go to port to port and, you know, just experience life and then move on, right? And people hate him because he's godless and everything too, right? And there's more scenes like that throughout the entire movie. After watching, when I was coming close to the end of the film, I noticed something that there's a movie that came out 15 years prior to this one that has a very similar premise. You know, if you think about someone who comes from out of town to a religion inhibited society, and then introduces something else that makes people start to, you know, broaden their minds a little more and have a better time enjoying their lives. What's a movie like that? The one that popped into my head was Footloose. This movie is like fucking, it's like Julia Binoche is the Kevin Bacon of this movie. And she comes in with her chocolate instead of her music and dance, and she liberates the town. And Alfred Molina, who plays the mayor, he is the John Lithgow of the movie, you know, where he's trying to turn everyone against her and stuff like that. So this movie's kind of like Footloose, you know, but there's no big dance numbers. But yeah, it's this movie, when you get to the end of it, it's like, I wouldn't go so far as to say, oh, it should have won Best Picture and blah, 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 blah. It's not like that. It's just more like it's like a cool breeze that you walk into, and it just makes you feel refreshed and calm. Does that make sense?
Sure.
That's Chocolat.
I've never watched them.
Chocolat has this charm to it that just makes you feel relaxed, and you're enjoying it the entire time. Whether it's a scene of turmoil for her for Julia Binoche's character, or it's just scenes of people enjoying chocolate and talking and having it's just a very comfortable movie, and I really like Chocolat. It is currently on Hulu. It has a 63% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Like I said, don't expect it to be a Johnny Depp movie, but it is not. He does show up, and when he's in the movie, he is absolutely great. But just remember this, he's not the main point of the film. All right. So it is currently on Hulu. Check it out. Chocolat.
All right. My pick of the week is Stir Crazy, starring Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. They are. It's the first movie that they've been in together since Silverstone.
Okay.
Prior to. In my opinion, it was directed by Sidney Poitier. Richard Pryor plays a character named Harry. Gene Wilder. Skip is a writer. He is an actor. They happen to get fired from their job. So instead of staying around New York, they decide for Hollywood, which basically takes a turn for the worse. As they're doing this little road trip, they take a job to pay for it. And when they get to Arizona, it says Woodpeckers, and do a song and dance for a local bank, you know, kind of like the sign flipping board guys.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is that when they're on break, two men steal their suits. These woodpeckers and rob the bank. So Harry and Skip are convicted of the robbery. Now, what's funny is that because Gene Wilder plays this character he hates life, basically. He's one of those guys that everything sucks. And then he gets to jail, right? And it seems to calm him. The place is just, you know, he loves it. He gets 3 square meals a day. He doesn't have to worry about anything.
Uh-huh.
And nothing gets him down.
Okay.
Even to the point where they put him in solitary confinement, and then, you know, the prison guards come out and they decide, you know, check on him, and they pull him out of solitary. Wilder goes, you know, could I go back in there for one more day? I was just beginning to find myself, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like, what the fuck is going on with this? They find out that Skip, Gene Wilder's character, can also ride a mechanical bull. And that's where the plot is the prison has a yearly rodeo.
Okay.
And it's a front for making extra money for the warden. The money is supposed to go to the prisoners, but he pockets it all.
Yeah.
So there's a whole corruption thing. So Joe Beth Williams is in it. Craig T. Nelson, Barry Corbin.
And Banks.
And a bunch of others that are usually Franklin Ajay. I never liked Franklin Ajay as a stand-up. Basically what happens is that the prisoners decide that they want to escape from. So they're going to use the rodeo as to escape from it.
Yeah.
And Richard Pryor's character is the one that stays with the group to kind of keep the inmates together. Wilder's character is the one that, there's a scene in it where Skip, they find out that there's this thing going on. Skip is put back like solitary confinement, but instead of solitary, they hang him in chains, which seems to fix his back.
Okay.
It's like all this good shit keeps happening to him, you know?
Okay.
You know, he's basically falling uphill. He's failing upwards, right? The whole plot is the prisoners want to escape this corrupt place. They come up with a plan to leave during the rodeo, but this plan backfires because basically Skip care less. While this is going on, the warden and his crony decide that they are going to kill Skip because he's too good. It's fucking with their money. So every attempt to kill Skip, basically they try to shoot him and he bends over at the right time and the bullet goes over his head. This is what made Gene Wilder. Wilder and Pryor were so good that, you know, I mean, they were supposed to be in Blazing Saddles together.
Yeah.
But Cleveland Little is the worst because Richard Pryor's weight, especially at this. While all this is going on, Skip and Harry's attorney, this Wilder and Pryor's attorney, introduce them to his partner who is going to help them try to get out of jail. This is all a cover up. It's a setup. You're ramrodded in a jail. So when they find out what's going on, Skip and Harry really making it to get out of prison.
Yeah.
They find out that they have been. So what they do is they make tools out of common everyday items in the metal shop, and then they get ready for the rodeo escape. While Garber, that's their attorney, and his partner investigate the whole robbery, which doesn't make any sense, getting a robbery. Meredith, who is Garber's partner, gets hired at a local strip club and happens to find the real crooks there. So she calls the lawyer who gets the cops involved, the robbers get ties everything up. And during the rodeo, Skip tries to talk the current champion into, he basically tells the champion, why do you want to continue being a tool when, you know, you're just being used by these two people to make them money and you're not seeing a fucking penny of it? You know, maybe you should really rethink your life. So as that's going on, the guy, Wilder talks to the champion bull rider, decides that maybe he's right, and he ends up winning the rodeo, but he gives the money to the inmates. Well, while all this is going on, the group is able to escape. All the inmates that are friends with Wilder and Pryor head off to Mexico before Skip and Harry can make good on their escape. They're stopped by their lawyer before leaving, and he ends up telling them that the real crook been caught, so they're free to go, right?
Yeah.
After they break out of prison.
Yeah. Which is a punishable offense.
Right. So Harry and Skip decide to head to L.A. Skip asks Meredith to come with him, and the three head off, which is, again, tying it up. What's just funny is this is the third biggest moneymaker of behind 9 to 5, Go figure that one out.
That's dated as fuck, but that was a trendy movie for its time.
And Empire Strikes. Well, 9 to 5, empowering women. Yeah. It currently sits at 67% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know if it's a 6 out of 10 type of movie, but you know, mine, I would have given it a 5, 5.5.
It's better than Another You.
Probably.
Where Pryor plays a blind guy.
Oh.
Or no, wait. No, that was See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Then there was another one called Another You by them, I think.
Yeah. Not everything pretty much in the 80s. Most movies in the 80s that Pryor was in wasn't that good.
Yeah. Except for Moving. That was great.
The sad thing about it is that Gene Wilder basically, I mean, he's only been in a handful of movies, but the movies that he was in get talked about a lot. You know, Young Frankenstein, Sherlock Holmes' younger brother, and
Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles, especially, you know, The Frisco Kid, a couple of others. I didn't care for the movie that much. I do like Pryor and Wilder, but trailer where Pryor was saying, you know, we bad.
Yeah.
And then everyone copying it.
I thought that was from Silver Street. Okay.
And it annoyed the hell out of me, you know, because, you know, it's just one of those things. It's one of those catchphrases that people use in the wrong, and but at 10 years old or 9 years old, I'm like, this, that people are stupid. Pryor and Wilder basically had that magical it factor. Too bad that they didn't get to work on more movies together.
Or the films that they were in had better writing.
Yeah, exactly. They could have been the next Hope and Crosby.
Yeah.
It works so well that the studios just dropped the ball. Wilder went, Pryor went on to do shittier projects.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, 3 was the one that he was, because that's the one with the robot at the end. Superman 4 was just with...
list. No, you're right. And
he played Gus Gorman.
He was in The Toy. I like The Toy.
I watched The Toy when I was on the...
Bustin' Loose like wasn't too bad.
Dude, The Toy seemed very racist to me.
Brewster's seemed. It seemed very racist. A fucking rich, super rich white guy hires a black man to take care of his son.
Yeah, and just be his son's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seemed racist.
I was kid gloving it. Fuck you.
Well, it may have been. It may have been a little racist. I don't know.
I bet you Jackie Gleason was all for it.
some kind of hero. Grease Lightning was. Surprisingly good was JoJo Dancer. If you watched it.
I never saw it, but I've heard good things.
It's my complete belief that because of Gilda Radishner condition, she had cancer. Wilder basically retired from life to care for.
Yeah.
Retired from the life. She passed on. He wasn't really interested in doing anything. He did try to make a comeback. Something Wilder. A couple of movies and this and that. But he basically didn't have anything left to prove.
She was his light.
Yeah. And yeah. Just revealed his death.
At least he won't remember.
He's dead. No, it wasn't a twofer. At least he won't remember.
Okay. All right. So you like the movie, but you don't. It's not the greatest.
I didn't. Yeah. I mean, it's got its moments, but you know, it's one of those movies where right place, right time for both of them.
Yeah.
And it crushed it.
All right. So there's only a couple things to talk about. Related or whatever. Just a couple trailers. I saw the full length Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Men Tell No Tales trailer where you get to see Captain Salazar, his character Javier Bardem, before he becomes a ghost, and how he gets set up by, you know, a young Jack Sparrow, and you know, gets killed. The trailer looks pretty good, except for one thing, and that thing is the young guy that was in the last movie, that played. He was like the, you know, the guy, the Bible thumper guy, the young kid who ends up falling for the mermaid. You see, you don't even remember Stranger Tides either. He's in this movie as well, and it seems like he's going to be taking a big chunk of it with Jack Sparrow, and it just seems like they got the young guy in there just to appeal to the younger audiences, and it just, it's fucking annoying. You know, bring back the guys that we like, you know, the hello, Poppet, you know, those people. In. Where's Gibbs? Where's Master Gibbs?
Dead.
No, he's dead. So anyway, that's my only problem so far with him. I hope it's going to be better than,
Well, we'll see.
You saw the Alien Covenant Red Band trailer. I think they're giving away way too much in the movie, of the movie in the trailer. You know, they're showing way too much alien action in it. You know, xenophobe action or a xenomorph. Sorry. You know, they're showing, you know, I thought this was going to be a sequel to Prometheus. This movie looks like more like either an alien prequel, like, you know, what Prometheus was supposed to be, or it looks like an alien sequel. You know, it doesn't, I don't know. I mean, it looks like it's going to be good, but it just, I don't know. It's kind of hard to find a little beat on it.
You're waffling.
All right. So lastly was, the little short film that we saw before the trailer or before the film of Logan, which was the Deadpool sequel, which was, when we saw it in the theater, it was pretty straightforward. You know, he's listening to, you know.
What do you mean it was pretty straightforward? The one that they leaked footage.
Yeah. Anyway, it was.
I understand what you meant by it was pretty straightforward.
I just mean that it's not that different from the one that they put on YouTube where it's got extra stuff in it. There's just a couple differences. Like,
yeah.
For one, he's listening to a different song on his headphone.
Right.
Instead of, you know, because in the theater, we heard Angel in the Morning. And in the extended version, he's listening to St. Elmo's Fire.
Right.
They show Stan Lee, right? And then also he calls the costume designer of the film about the costume.
Yeah.
While he's in the phone booth.
Zip it, Stan Lee.
Yeah. And then I guess the whole synopsis for the old man and the sea shows at the end, like really fast. It scrolls through it. And I guess that's supposed to be Deadpool being a sarcastic asshole by, you know, pretty much giving up the whole premise of Logan.
The Old Man in the Sea is a story of a fight between an elderly, accomplished fisherman, Santiago, really big, like, huge. The story opens with Santiago suffering 84 days without a fish because he's the unluckiest son of a bitch on planet Earth. Honestly, if you were in a boat for 84 days, it'd be hard not to catch a fish, even by accident. Santiago was so unlucky that his apprentice, Manolin, was forbidden by his mom and pa to fish with him. But as the Fresh Prince used to say, parents just don't understand. So the boy visits Santiago's shack anyway, ignoring the inherent risks of unsupervised playtime with an elderly man who talks to himself. Manolin helps out, moving Santiago's fishing gear, making food, and talking about baseball. Especially Joe DiMaggio, who used to bump fuzzies with Marilyn. The next day, Santiago tells Manolin that he's going way out into the Gulf Stream, way out, north of Cuba. Lady Luck is returning on the 85th day of his crappy life. Santiago drops his lines and by noon gets a bite when he feels like a big-ass fish. He's sure it's a winner. He fights and fights and fights but can't pull the monster in. Santiago's leaky old boat is pulled by the fish for 2 days and holds on for dear life. Even though he's bloody and beat, Santiago begins to appreciate this mighty adversary. He starts calling him brother or even bro. It's sort of a love story if you really think about it. The most, like most romantic comedies, the reader pictures the delightful out, followed by the inevitable interspecies. On the third day, Santiago's freaking exhausted and decides he just wants to fish. He wants to fish to do what he says and not always swim wherever he stabs it. The fucking harpoon. Super gross. Blood everywhere. Because like many men his age, Santiago has difficulty expressing his emotions and fears with words instead of giving in to base desires and imposing his gigantically terrible position on any given subject through violence. Anyway, he straps the marlin to the side of his skiff and hits the road home, ready to act like a total show-off to everyone, probably gouge people on the price. But guess what? Pretty soon, sharks begin to attack the bleeding marlin's carcass. Because, as we all know, life is a tragic opera, and just when you think you finally found something good and true, sharks come along and rip it all to fucking shreds while dry-humping your dignity with their crazy, weird shark dick. Sure, Santiago tries killing a few of them, but he drops his harpoon because his hands are just as old as he is. By nighttime, the sharks have pretty much eaten the entire marlin. Only a bleach-white skeleton remains, silently mocking him in the murky darkness. Santiago realizes he's still unlucky. Really unlucky. Duh. He calls the sharks dream killers, which isn't really all that fair. I mean, the sharks were just doing their job in the marlin. Jesus, don't even get me started on the marlin. It was just hanging out one day, minding its own business, maybe thinking about ways it could be a better provider for its family. And wham, harpoon in the brain. Who's the dream killer now, fuckface? The hypocrisy is pretty much boundless at this point. Eventually, Santiago makes it ashore, leaving the bones of them in his boat. He hobbles to his shack, makes it home, and crashes. Like I said, he's super tired. The next morning, a group of fishermen gather around Santiago's boat. One measures the skeleton, and holy shit, shingles, it's over 18 feet. The head of the fish is given to Pedrico. It's strange that this. And the other fishermen ask Manolin to send their glad tidings to the old man. Manolin brings Santiago newspapers and coffee when he wakes, and they decide to fish together again. Many years later, there's a Red Lobster restaurant near, offering a casual dining experience.
Seems like a Chuck Lorre rant in an episode of Two Men. All right, so yeah, if you go see Logan, which we highly recommend, get there early enough so that you're there before the film starts so you can see the Deadpool teaser trailer. Because it is
awesome.
All right. So the next movie that we will be talking about on a couple of Average Joes is an escape movie review podcast. I know, Mike. Don't even.
I'm tired of fighting it, dude.
Even I was like right when I started saying it, I already knew. So we will be talking about Skull Island or the retitled Kong Skull Island because we weren't smart enough to know that them putting Kong on it.
Kong!
So we will be seeing that film. We'll let you know how that is next week and whatever flicks we pick and whatever other worthwhile news comes up. So, Cinescape, movie reviews, I am Joe Spiegel.
Mike Sutherland.
Catch y'all on the flip side.
Okay.
Good show! Jolly good show. Jolly good show indeed.
Hakuna Matata, bitches.
This is the Cinescape Movie Podcast. We thank you for listening to the show, and if you have any questions or comments, you can email us or tweet us. My handle is @JoeSpiegel_Joe. My handle, that's what I call it, my handle.
You can tweet me at, you can send me a tweet at.
Tweet me, you can follow me, fuck off, all right.
Yeah, follow, you can follow me or tweet me at, send a tweet to.
All right.
Follow would be better.
You can follow me on Twitter.
You can Twitter me.
You can follow me on Twitter at @JoeSpiegel_Joe.
And for me, it is at.
What about you?
MPS5150, because I make it easy.
Yeah, you do.
Well, that's the end of the show. Thank you for listening. And please remember, share the podcast.
Hey.
What is it, Joe?
Yeah. You see that little button over there? Yeah.
Yes.
All you gotta
what
do?
Button?
The little share button.
Which button is that?
It says share.
Sometimes it's a little arrow that goes in a circle.
Regardless, it's there.
Or more.
So share.
Share. Share that podcast.
Click that shit. It's simple.
Please.
We do put some work into this. Not a lot. Not as much as we should. But still, all you have to do is click the share button.
Yeah. Click anything that says share. Like on our movie reviews, there's a Facebook share and a Google Plus. Pick one. We prefer Facebook, but you know.
Spread the love.
Help us grow.
Spread the love, and we will spread our legs open for you.
No, we won't.
I take showers.
Well, what is that one? Show the balls?
Open your balls.
Open your balls.
Shower, yeah. Share the show.
Share the hell out of it.
Share.
Give her some love. I sound like little Nick.
Have a good night.
This is the end. It's the end. Finito! The end, I tell you! We're all going to nibble the dust!
Or go fuck yourself.